Good evening. Welcome to the Soleri Report. Today is September 12th, 2013. I'm Catherine Alston Fitz, and I'm delighted you could join me this evening. We've had the Soleri Summit for the last 2 days. Our team from all across the country has been gathered into Hickory Valley, and we want to thank you very much for those of you who sent comments and feedback. What we've been talking about for 2 days is the many different ways we can improve your subscriber experience. And I want to share one of those decisions with you. And in fact, this evening marks an historic event. This will be our last regularly scheduled live show. We're going to shift to an all pre-recorded format. The fact of the matter is that the telecommunications infrastructure in the United States has become increasingly unstable. And we feel by going to a pre-recording, we can assure the very highest quality of production and sound. And this will also enable us to produce, by the following day, a video that integrates the audio in with the slides for the money and market section, which we think you very much enjoyed with our summaries that we post on the blog called Just a Taste. So we'll be able to do a Just a Taste version of the money and market. So to make it easier for you to submit questions, because we won't be able to have the webinar software, we've added an askcatherine@soleri.com email, and we've put that email up on the resource page for subscribers. So if you don't remember it, you can just go there and find it. And we hope that will make it easier for you to submit your questions. And we've already been getting a nice flow of questions. We do have the slides up on the webinar software tonight. For those of you not listening live, you can get them up on the blog. And again, starting next week, we'll be integrating them into a video version. So you'll be able to download the audio or watch the video or read the transcript a week later. Our theme tonight is power shift. We are watching around the world unprecedented power shifts. And whenever you're in a situation where you have this much power shifting, of course, the situation becomes very fluid. The gods get warring. Certainly different factions get warring. Anything can happen. The NSA leaks that we're watching and the whole debate about internet privacy and security is really a window into some of those wars. What we're in the middle of is an unprecedented shift of financial flows, purchases, currency, new currencies, crowdfunding, new ways of financing equity capital that are beginning to now move onto the social media and online platform in a much more significant amount. It's really just begun. And that's power shifting the traditional players. They are fighting back. It wouldn't surprise me, as Dr. Farrell and I just talked about when we did our long interview about 6 weeks ago. Vatican, City of London, and are pushing back. The defense contractors are seeing an opportunity to play for turf up against the formal U.S. intelligence agencies. It's quite a fight, and it's something we're going to be watching closely for some time to come. If you haven't listened to that interview, the two-hour special I did with Dr. Farrell, I strongly recommend it as a backdrop for what's been happening. On the Soleri Report, interestingly enough, we posted our interview this evening with Franklin Sanders, who was in South Carolina. Great interview. I also got a chance, in addition to coming current on the precious metals markets, to talk a little bit about what some of the obstacles are to using precious metals as a community currency. And so we got to touch base on a bunch of very interesting topics. But one of the things that came up at one point, I brought up some of the events that are on the darker side of life. And Franklin, God love him, just said, you know, I don't like to go there. And I thought a lot about that since we talked. And I do feel very strongly that our job on the Soleri Report is to look at the darker side to the extent we need to find practical pathways to build a lighter future. And one of those favorite quotes is, deal with reality or reality will deal with you. One of the reasons I've been such a proponent of the slow burn as opposed to other scenarios of how the economy is going to unfold is because I've had a chance to look at the darker side of control, whether it's surveillance systems or invisible weaponry, UFOs, chemtrails, mind controls, many of the topics we've explored on the Salieri Report and described to you, because I believe they're relevant to how your money and time works and to how to watch and understand the game of economic warfare that's going on before us. I'm talking at the Casey Conference in early October, and I'm going to talk about material emissions. And I think it is a material emission for me not to look at those things, but I also don't want to dwell on them. I certainly don't believe they're the most important game in town. So we try and stay in amusement. I once had my, I was talking to a client today and they said, I should tell you this story. I was once very sort of in a dark place in Washington in the 90s when I was dealing with the worst part of the physical danger involved in the litigation. And I went to church and my pastor had worked up a whole head of steam about something and sort of screamed at us, the devil can have my car and he can have my house, but he cannot have my joy. The idea being we decide how we approach things. And I think no matter what's going on, it's imperative that we approach this power shift and the risks and opportunities in it from a state of joy, because it's through that that we're going to build the kind of future we want. I absolutely reject the vision of the future that's being created by the leadership. I have no intention of living in a police state. So I'm going to do my best to build and finance the future I would like to leave for the next generations. And that's the kind of future that I would have liked to have been born into. So I think what every one of us can do makes an enormous difference. One of my favorite quotes from the movie The Gladiator is, what we do in this lifetime echoes through eternity. And I believe that. Money and markets, the great governance shell game, where is the money? That's our newest commentary. We just posted it today and I want to describe it to you, but I encourage you to go take a look at the blog. This is inspired by the fact that I can't tell you how many conversations I've had over the last 2 months where somebody tells me the economy is collapsing and I tell them, no, that's not what's happening. So I want you to just imagine 20 years ago, we had a series of systems, financial and legal systems in this country. And in those governmental systems, we had $100 trillion of liabilities and $100 trillion of assets. And then we had the financial coup d'etat, which took $40 trillion in assets and moved it over into a new entity, which we'll just call, for purposes of giving the example, the Breakaway Inc. So Breakaway Inc. now has $40 trillion of assets with no liabilities. And sitting back in the legacy systems, we have still the $100 trillion of liabilities, but now we only have $60 trillion of assets. And so the slow burn is the process by which we squeeze out the most we can from the assets while disappointing, abrogating, or debasing the $100 trillion of liabilities. So you're trying to reconcile the assets with the liabilities, and somebody's going to get disappointed. And of course, the creditors and the beneficiaries within the legacy systems are fighting to see if, you know, am I going to get 10 cents on the dollar, 50 cents on the dollar, or a dollar on the dollar? And who you are and where you are in that position is very complex. One of the things, one of my goals on the Salieri Report is to not allow you, I certainly want you to do the best you can do in terms of getting, you know, 100 cents on the dollar. However, what I don't want you to do is waste an enormous amount of time being run around the 26-step process in the system thinking that you're going to get the money, because nobody is in a position to tell you the truth. The history of politics in this country over the last century, if not longer, is that there's no political constituency yet for fiscal and monetary responsibility. You know, hopefully that's growing. I'm praying that it will emerge. But in the meantime, the legacy leadership is not turning around and telling people the truth. You know, what they're doing is they're busy trying to squeeze tax money and capital out of the tax havens. They're abrogating union contracts in places like Michigan or the different municipalities that are declaring bankruptcy. And they're trying to squeeze the state and local pension funds for more money. What they're not doing is they're not suggesting that we get the $40 trillion back because they're worried about getting killed if they should try and do that. And they're not even mentioning that it's gone, because if they were to sit down and tell you where it's gone to, how it's been positioned, how it's being invested, you know, there's still a lot of people that will laugh at you. Leaving the matrix quickly is always a stretch. So meantime, you know, before you think the economy is going to collapse, remember the leadership of the breakaway civilization is having a good time and things are growing like gangbusters. Think about it. If you look at how the defense contractor stocks have been trading, they are trading way up. They're trading ahead of the equity, the U.S. equity markets, which are certainly up for the year. And I believe that's because that $40 trillion is providing the equivalent of a new endowment that's providing them a fee flow. They're not dependent anymore on the U.S. federal government. So we have a round of sequestration cuts that have kicked in. We're expecting a new round of sequestration cuts kicking in. And yet what you can see and what you realize is those stocks are not dropping as a result of those cuts. They're trading up and things look quite good. So I posted with the article a chart of Lockheed Martin stock, and you can see it's trading well ahead of the U.S. stock market. Now, Lockheed is not only the largest overall contractor to the U.S. government, they're the largest IT contractor as well as defense contractor. Their responsibilities also include many of the accounting payment systems. So when you think about it, they not only do the work and sell the goods to the U.S. government, then they get to turn around and write the check to themselves, more than a few conflicts of interest. If you check out Popular Mechanics, Popular Science, Wired Magazine, MIT Technology, on and on and on, many of these magazines are now full of space travel. We see an announcement this week up on the blog that 200 people have now applied to be part of a one-way expedition to Mars. Aerospace manufacturing is up a lot. We have seen over the last year more than a few Silicon Valley entrepreneurs are proposing maglev trains, space companies, space mining. And when you think about it, many more billionaires under the jurisdiction of a governance system of people who can kill with impunity means pools of capital to fund those kinds of enterprises. But that's to give you an example that Breakaway Inc. is going gangbusters. They've got incredible new technology rolling out of the lab, and they are organizing and funding the next phase. And so we are watching an economy that's diverging between the legacy systems that are squeezing down and then the breakaway, which is moving up. And it almost looks like a rocket which is ejecting its booster rocket, which is falling back down to ground. So when people tell you the country is broke, what I say is the country is far from broke. The legacy systems are being re-engineered. They have been financial coup d'etat, and they are being re-engineered. It is not a pretty picture, but it's a different picture than the country being broke. And I think it's important that we have the right frame and the right story. Okay, now, just to say that doesn't mean the new economy is going to come up and everything's going to be wonderful. In a situation, in a power shift and change this significant, anything can happen. You have factions warring. And of course, as I've said many times, the danger is not collapse, the danger is war. Yesterday was the anniversary of 9/11, an incredibly strategic event in the history of the breakaway civilization and the financial coup d'etat. Yesterday was the anniversary. We posted, as we do every year, our prayer for all concerned and involved in 9/11. A new poll for about 9/11 shows that approaching a majority of Americans do not believe the official story and are open to alternative theories. It's interesting, if you look at the Lockheed stock chart that I put up in my old articles about 9/11, Lockheed stock rose dramatically after 9/11, just as it did, just as it has recently. So interesting. Syria. What in the world is going on? Syria commanded the headlines for the last week or two. Now, the notion of invading or military action in Syria is an old one. It started in 2001. If you go back on the blog and take a look at the video of Wesley Clark describing how the Pentagon plan right after 9/11 proposed going, I believe the battle plan was the same I got at the time, which was first we go into Afghanistan, then we go to Iraq, then we go to Libya, then we go to Syria, then we go to Iran. But it was essentially the grand chessboard vision of taking control of Eurasia. Now, what in the world is going on? In fact, it's a couple things. It's important to understand that Eurasia is a very significant market share and one with tremendous growth. It's also important strategically for the pipelines planned. Big rumors this week that China had taken the lead on the TPAI pipeline, one of the biggest. China awarding grants and credits along the route. Those rumors, I've not been able to confirm them, that China has replaced the United States. Wouldn't surprise me, no matter who's running it, that Halliburton still has the lead construction contract. But so clearly the oil card and the control of the energy resources as they move back and forth, either going out to China and Asia or into Europe, is a critical issue. The other is, if we're going to come out with a new digital currency, then everybody needs to be into the central banking system under the Bank of International Settlements. And North Korea and the countries in the Middle East were noteworthy for not being in the central banking system. So part of the pressure could not just be the market share, the oil card, but getting everybody into the BIS so we can start to seriously re-engineer the currency. Now, we don't know what happened. We don't know what it was this week that was so urgent that forced Obama, using the pretext of chemical weapons, to make the pitch for us to go to war. We know there was enormous pushback, which is why he finally said, okay, I've got to go to Congress. And then we proceeded to watch the whole world pull out, or almost the whole world pull the rug out from under Obama. Our British allies voting not to support whatever actions we took. Many people in the military and the media not being supportive. Certainly the American people, 70% or more, saying they didn't want to support the president in an action in Syria, even if there was no boots on the ground. And what we really saw was the risk of having to lead in a non-transparent world. Putin, who was really the spoiler in the mix for the Americans, runs essentially a totalitarian or a much more controlled environment. Obama answering much more to Congress and the American people during in a critical time in budget. It's very hard for him to go out when 70 to 80% of the American people don't want action and the military is exhausted from what they've done in Afghanistan and Iraq. So Obama, not able to say what the real reasons are, having to depend on a pretext, Putin pulling the pretext out from under him, has had a very bad week. And again, it's just the risk of leading in a non-transparent world. Meantime, it was a wild week in the media, including with the Syria story, because we are watching ludicrous stories and explanations of what's going on. We had in the New York Times, Friedman wrote an article on Libya and Syria, and Krugman wrote one on Obamacare that just had me rolling my eyes, thinking these people are, you know, sitting on Park Avenue having Chardonnay and are absolutely clueless how things work in the real world down in the, you know, in the streets of the country. There seems to be a real divergence between reality and Park Avenue. And it just seems to get worse. Charlie Rose did an interview of Syrian leader Assad, and Greenwald kept dumping out more revelations about the NSA and Snowden. The New York Times published an op-ed from Putin, and I finally was inspired to write a commentary that's up on the blog called Why Are Charlie Rose and Glenn Greenwald So Lucky? If you look at how protected they are, what they've been doing and how protected they are, when reporters and researchers who've done a lot less have ended up in prison or dead, it really begs to ask the question, who's protecting them, which gets back to what's really going on in Syria for and against. Markets, we had a very significant gold slam down this week. Silver closed today at $21.93, gold at $13.27. A critical issue was, would gold break the $13.50 line, and it did. If I continue to think the primary trend is going to reassert by the end of the year, it's what Franklin and I talked about on the interview, but I don't underestimate the ability of the markets or the managers to take the price of gold back down to the summer lows before we reassert towards the end of the year. So don't be surprised if we go on a precious metals roller coaster, and it's one of the things Franklin and I talk about in tonight's interview, which is up on the blog. A lot of trading up and down sideways. The S&P has been strong. The American markets have been strong. The emerging markets and commodities are peeking their head up, looking like they want to be strong, and interest rates have dropped back just a little bit. It's clear that the long-term bull market in bonds is eventually coming to an end here, so we're coming into a turn, but it looks like we're going to have a little respite at least with bonds for now. The S&P has still not made it back to 1700. We see a change in the Dow index. Bank of America, Alcoa, and HP getting dropped out, and Goldman, Nike, Visa getting put in. One of the things that's interesting about that is one of the things that keeps the indexes up is we keep changing what's in it. Keep watching interest rates, even though we've gotten a bit of a breather. I think interest rates, even more than the U.S. dollar, are the key variable to watch, because the legacy systems were financed with debt. The breakaway Inc. is going to be financed with equity. It's going to be much more of an equity world. But a lot of what will go on in the sort of the reengineering and the workout of the legacy systems is going to depend on what happens in the bond market, and interest rates is the variable that's going to tell us how that's going to proceed. Fracking has come to Europe. We see stories of UK moving forward on fracking, of course, Europe resisting. It's very important. I had Justin make up a chart to show you what has happened to the price of natural gas here in the country. The United States right now is leading the world in bringing their emissions down, and that's because we're replacing coal with gas. And the tremendous, you can hate Cheney, but at the same time, if you look at what he did in terms of engineering the institutionalization or the introduction of fracking technology in this country, it's had a dramatic impact on bringing costs down, putting us back in the game in manufacturing. I'm not saying I would have done it. I'm not saying it's a good thing. But if you understand the strategic importance of bringing that price down and sort of putting manufacturing in the game, it's going to have a very dramatic impact on the economy. It's having a very dramatic impact on the economy now. It would be really interesting to think about what the U.S. dollar might be trading at if our energy costs weren't dropping dramatically like that. Other stories, and this was a week when the information was exploding. You see, as I said, space everywhere. 200,000 people sign up for a one-way trip to Mars. Goldman snubs its own employees. This is a very interesting story. And a story that will tell you a little bit about the breakaway civilization. We have Goldman Sachs saying it's no longer going to permit employees who are not accredited investors, which means they don't have a net worth of at least $1 million, invest on the Goldman Sachs private money management platform. And what that tells me is they don't want their employees knowing what they're doing, what their investment strategy is. It's kind of scary because Goldman was always smart about making sure everyone at Goldman Sachs, down to the guys in the print shop and the secretaries, feel like they were an insider, part of the in crowd. And To snub them like that, to me, is a very dangerous thing, because you're talking about 20,000 people who have access to an extraordinary amount of information. But I guess they don't want them to have access to their investment strategies. So, you know, there's trouble in paradise, no doubt about it. Another interesting story that comments on Breakaway Inc. J.P. Morgan has removed lending barriers and are starting to lend in the mortgage markets again. This is a very important signal. As I said, I believe the Fed has finished shredding the mortgage paper. They've bought up the fraudulent paper. They've shredded it. The banks are now clean of that paper and can proceed to start to lend again. Of course, now that they and their friends have picked up all the real estate cheap with all the foreclosures, as they start to bring the housing market back up, it's going to be a very different person that benefits. Another comment on Breakaway Inc. Twitter announces its IPO. Again, we're going to talk a lot more about this next week. Crowdfunding has the potential to dramatically increase social media and internet stock valuations worldwide. We're going to be doing two shows on crowdfunding this year, one next week, to introduce sort of what is crowdfunding, why do I think it's so important, where does it fit in strategically, why should you care, how will it impact you, and then we're going to do another one when the SEC regulations are promulgated, because that's really when it's going to get going. Okay, let's look at the legacy system squeeze stories, because a lot of the stories you're reading about sort of financial issues are really about that squeeze of making the $60 trillion cover the $100 trillion of liabilities. And in one sense, you can batch them all into sort of one category. Of course, we have the budget negotiations going on in Congress. And among other things, that Syria and the budget negotiations have slowed down immigration reform. This is the problem with having a system that's this centralized. Everything, the pig's trying to go through the snake. And frankly, it's too much complexity and too many political, too much political capital being demanded. So immigration reform may slow down and may take the bite. Of course, everybody gave up on tax reform a long time ago. There's no way that can also make it through. We have a journalist in Texas facing prison over a link. He linked to things that are being said to be, you know, classified documents. He didn't publish them. He just linked to them. It's a very dangerous legal precedent. Oftentimes you'll see the enforcement agencies go after somebody who doesn't have the resources to fight. So you wouldn't do this to Glenn Greenwald because The Guardian has the resources to fight. You create the legal precedent on somebody who can't afford to fight. And then, of course, you can apply it elsewhere. So blog story is posted on that. Another story this week, IBM moves retirees to insurance exchanges, costs rise. That's a little signal. As I've said many times, Obamacare created a framework so that you could start to squeeze down private and public plans. And I think it's created a framework where a lot of the healthcare benefits, both for private retirees as well as government programs, are now going to get squeezed down. IBM doing that is sort of another example, like the Goldman Sachs example of companies snubbing either employees or former employees and thinking they can get away with it. A notice coming out that the U.S. is going to simulate in November a large-scale maneuver of powers, failure on the power grid. I'm working very hard to make sure my generator is fixed, maintained, and in good shape. I've had a generator for quite a while, and I like to be prepared to go for 2 to 3 days without power from the grid. And I really recommend if you can, it's worth considering, because I think these kind of interruptions are things that can happen and might happen. Our hero this week is Pearl Fryer. Pearl Fryer is, to me, he's a gardener. Wikipedia calls him a topiary artist, but he's an extraordinary man living in rural South Carolina who just got it in his head one day that he was going to become a gardener, and he was going to win Gardener of the Month Club in his town, Bishopville, South Carolina. And he's proceeded to create and grow a garden that is, you know, I can't even describe it to you. It is simply an astonishing, an amazing, beautiful, mysterious creation that is not only loved in Bishopville, but is now probably the biggest economic development thing going in Bishopville, South Carolina. But he is a wonderful example of what one person can do to not only change the world, but inspire many people and to create economic value from, you know, from doing what's in your heart and what you love. He's also the subject of a documentary film, which we're reviewing, and Let's Go to the Movies, so I'll get back to it in a second. Ask Catherine a lot of great questions this week. Okay, one from Bob. Great call on the gold-silver knockdown. I guess I had said that that was probable that it would happen. The Fed Treasury says the dollar would fade over 10 years in 809, J.P. Morgan being long in gold and silver, and short silver, but speculatively speaking insolvent, and the Angus Fleer retracing into North America. What is your opinion of the future of the dollar? I think the dollar in the short term is strong. Although I will say that the current events on Syria are not good for the dollar. The president having the rug pulled out from under him by various allies and the military, etc., that kind of sort of political flop is short-term bad for the dollar, as we saw it drop this morning. But I think, put that aside, I think the dollar is strong from now, but part of the pressure of getting everybody into the central banking system is there's no doubt they want to centralize and re-engineer the currencies. And that has been slower going than I think the leadership wanted. In terms of the Anglosphere retrenching into North America, I think the Anglosphere is retrenching into the English-speaking nations. And if you want to learn more about that, definitely listen to the interview with Dr. Farrell. We watched the emerging markets start to turn up this week and commodities start to turn up. Let's see how they continue to trade, because I think the pullback of capital from the emerging markets is a process that's going to continue into 2014, and let's see how tough it gets in 2014 when the bond market, when interest rates start to turn up. Because when interest rates start to turn up, I think it's going to hit the emerging markets much harder. Big question is how far and fast they go. And then, of course, how far and fast we can get the crash up in the equity markets to happen, which I think is the leadership's goal. Again, if the gold and silver knockdown get down to the summer bottoms, I do believe, you know, very good chance we're going to see the primary trend reassert by the end of the year. But, you know, let's see what happens. Look to November and March to tell us the story. And Franklin and I talk a lot more about it in the interview. Okay, Catherine, I'm a big fan. This is from Steve. I'm a big fan of your intelligent, creative, and open-minded presentation on life in the Matrix. Question for you and Franklin, what events will precipitate an end to the paper manipulation of the precious metals market, i.e. the spot price? The huge paper gold dump that dropped the price below 1500 last April is a good example. Which event will most likely set the PM prices free of the paper manipulation? When will simple market fundamentals like physical supply and demand return as the major determinant of the price of gold and silver? Will PM dealers be able to break free of the future spot price rigging, COMEX default, fractional reserve banking collapse and bank runs, stock market crash, extreme PM physical shortages, backwardation, world dollar dump, any of these or something else? I think that managing the precious metals prices is a critical component of the governance system. So I don't see that changing. Once the governance system manages in re-engineering the global currency, particularly if they're able to create sort of a digital reserve currency or a one world currency, the process of managing could sort of quiet down and you'll see less shenanigans. That's possible if we see a war break out and the plans for a global governance system fall apart. We could also see a return to something much more organic and market-like. But I think the notion that we're going to have one of these events, like a Big Bang event, cause the governance system to lose control and return to markets, I don't think that's the right frame on the situation, because I think the precious metals market has been managed for a long time, and it's a critical part of the entire governance system. And that's why I keep saying, you know, the most important question is, who's really running things? How does that system work, and how do we evolve it into a governance system that makes sense? So this is a bigger conversation about who's running the planet. But I think this notion that we're any one of these things could happen and it's going to break the precious metals market free is just not the right way to look at the story. From Maryland, according to Wall Street Journal, HUD has told Westchester County in New York that their local zoning regulations do not allow for enough diversity, and HUD will define what regulations the local counties must use in developing their communities, such as the limits on size, type, height, and density of buildings and diversity. What is HUD up to, and where do they get their authority to usurp the local community's desires regarding their right to define their neighborhoods? Is taking away property rights the next step in forcing each family to live in a community and house, HUD determines? Since most of the deeds to mortgages are held by Boston Federal Bank, will they have the power to distribute these deeds as they determine? I don't know if that's true. I'm not sure what they meant by that. If you go back on the blog, it was about a year ago, I posted a link to the new proposal from HUD as to their ability as a regulatory matter to simply micromanage everybody in this way. It's truly one of the most frightening proposals I've ever seen come out of government. It's, you know, it makes the Soviet Union look like a market economy. What is this about? If you take this and combine it with Agenda 21 and combine it with things like the Trans-Pacific Partnership, you're basically looking at a situation where you're creating the ability of the federal government, large investors, to come into a community and basically drive everybody into the ground with rules and regulations. So it's part of squeezing down in the legacy economy. It's part of maintaining very tight control at the top. What the sort of specifics and inside baseball on this piece is, I don't know. But it's HUD is planning on, if you look at their pronouncement of about a year ago, they're planning on doing this or reserving the right to do this everywhere. It's pretty scary. Hi, Catherine. And this is a comment from the blog on the documentary the review I posted of the documentary on called Moon Rising. Very interesting documentary, which I encourage you to watch. And they asked if I would check out someone named Wal Thornhill and consider him for the Salieri Report. So we will definitely take a look. Thank you for that. That was from Jacques. Megan, well, we could just go galactic and say that our planet's undergoing a complete shift in consciousness, energy, and light, and that finally the truth is going to gain strength with every passing day. Maybe it's getting easier for people behind the scenes who are numbering more and more and who are in positions of power to protect those who come forward. Great comment, because, you know, there are so many people within the operations of companies and governments who are, you know, feel the way that we all do, that this is not an optimal way to run a planet. So we certainly want to encourage all of them to do the right thing and be allies. So great comment from Megan. Finally, from Kathy, a question about idea about Ellen Brown sending a link of Ellen's latest article on the importance of getting all the different, or sort of the reasons behind the Syria squabble being to get all those countries into the central banking system. And a plug for Polyface Farm. Very good. Too late for Franklin's discussion, so maybe you and Chuck Gibson will touch on inflation expectations for early 2014 during the quarterly report. I will make every effort to do that. And let's see, that's it. Let me just check the webinar software. Ooh, more questions. Okay. Given the nature of the tapeworm economy and the desire of many of us not to be a part of it, what are your suggestions about the best ways to prepare for retirement? Oh, great question. You know something? I may just do a Solari report on that. That's a great question, but I'm not going to do it tonight. I am going to try and one of the things I would encourage you to do is to listen to next week's Solari report on crowdfunding. But great question. Thank you, Michael. Joan, you've talked about the black budget and how much of the scientific innovations created over the years are beginning to infiltrate society, such as 3D printers. How does the brilliant Elon Musk fit into this? What happens when you have a wave of technology coming out of the insiders or out of the black budget? What they will do is they will pick out really capable and brilliant entrepreneurs and promote them and encourage them to lead the idea discussion. Now, it's always interesting to watch this because many of those entrepreneurs have no idea how they're being positioned and why they have the wind at their back. They're usually pretty sincere people. I think Musk is a very talented guy, and he's got an enormous wind at his back in addition to being a very talented and capable guy. And because they would much rather have those people sell the ideas than they sell the ideas. Now, those ideas can be good or bad. So I think maglev trains and space travel are great ideas. Mark Zuckerberg promoting, you know, all of us getting in there and building the CIA and NSA files on ourselves and our friends, I don't think is such a great idea. You know, so I think that Google and Facebook and a lot of these things were basically promoted as one thing when in fact they're Trojan horses and they're really something else. So Musk is an example of, you know, a great entrepreneur who's leading things that they want to see promoted and be made fashionable. You know, but we also see other entrepreneurs leading things that they're making quite fashionable but are not necessarily, you know, such wonderful ideas. So I would say Musk definitely has a black budget wind at his back, but you know, my guess is he's a pretty talented, capable entrepreneur. And if you look at the things you're promoting, I think the things that, you know, I, for one, would love to see beautiful electric cars. And I think PayPal's a great service. And I think his SpaceX is a great idea. And I think maglev trains are a great idea. So, you know, so the important thing to always ask about an entrepreneur or an idea is, does it have a positive total economic return or does it have a negative one? So I think that's kind of how I do the take. Okay, the interview tonight, as we all know, is with Franklin Sanders, Precious Metals, and it's up on the blog, and I enjoyed it at your leisure. Let's go to the movies. A Man Named Pearl, a great documentary about Pearl Fryer. If you don't know about Pearl Fryer and you want to be absolutely inspired and feel like you can, you know, you love being a member of the human race and you think the world is a fantastic place. If you really want to feel great, get A Man Named Pearl. It's a 2006 documentary and it's great. After I saw it from Netflix, I just went out and bought it because it was one I wanted in my library. Okay, that's it for this evening. In closing, coming up next week, Introduction to Crowdfunding. You don't want to miss it. It's going to be our Coming Clean interview for the month. Then John Rappaport, and on October 3rd, very big one, third quarter wrap-up. I think what I'll do is I'll answer that question on how to prepare for retirement in the wrap-up. And but if you have any other things you want me to focus in on the third quarter wrap-up, definitely send them to askcatherine@solari.com. So until next week on crowdfunding, please remember, don't worry about whether or not there is a conspiracy. If you're not in a conspiracy, you need to start one. Ladies and gentlemen, good night and good luck.